Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
This is Dmitry Samarov from Chicago, Illinois, and I love listening to Vish Khanna's Creative Control because whether he's talking to a favorite musician or actor of mine or someone I've never heard of, it's as if he's introducing me to a new friend, and the way things are going, couldn't you use a new friend? Listen now.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Pierre Quenders is a talented, award-winning singer, composer, dancer, actor, and performer based in Montreal, Quebec. Born José-Louis Modabi, Quenders is originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo, where he lived until he was 16 years old, and he's been an active artist in Canada since 2014. In 2022, Quenders won the Polaris Music Prize for his album José-Louis and the Paradox of Love, which finds him singing in at least 5 languages and reflects his interests in things like Congolese rumba, pop music, and electronica, with songs that explore liberty and romance. On January 12, 2023, the Paradox of Love track No 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 was highlighted for a remix EP released by Arts and Crafts and features contributions by artists like Vanny Fox, Majuz, and Spilulu. Ahead of a February 16th show in Ottawa and a February 17th show in Toronto, Pierre and I connected for a nice conversation about hitting the road again and a newfound fondness for Edmonton, his travels to and from Kinshasa from Canada, how life in the Congo compares to his experience in other countries, his musical origin story and early love for dancing, what both Congolese rumba and Celine Dion mean to him, being a multilingual speaker and singer, how winning the Polaris Music Prize has impacted him, insights about his No 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 EP, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into this podcast. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and very friendly people who work there who will happily help you source special orders and things you want. Say you want some Pierre Quenders records, just go to blackbird.ca, type in Pierre Quenders, see what they have available, and I'm sure they can either ship it to you or have it on hand if you can come in to one of their locations. Again, for more info, visit blackbird.ca. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, This is episode 755 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Pierre Quenders, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Pierre. How's it going?
Hi, Vish. I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much. First of all, where in the world are you today?
Well, I'm back in Montreal right now. I just got back yesterday from a few days of my tour right now.
Yes. I'm calling you from Edmonton, Alberta. I understand you were just in Alberta. Is that correct?
Yes. We just performed in Alberta 2 weeks ago, I think. And it was one of the best show so far of the tour. I was pretty much excited about that one.
Oh, nice. So that show is in Edmonton, but I believe you just played Calgary in the last couple of days. Is that right?
Yes, I played Calgary this Saturday. There was the Block Eater powered by Calgary Folk Fest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you did a thing which is unusual. You played Edmonton sometime in late January. Did you just go home?
No, actually, after Edmonton, we were still on tour.
Okay.
We flew from Edmonton to Los Angeles, so we did a little bit of the West Coast in the USA. We did Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, and Seattle.
I see. And then on the way back home, in a way, sort of, you were ended up back in Alberta for a Calgary show. I get it.
Exactly. And we did Victoria on the way after Seattle. We did Victoria, then Vancouver, and Calgary.
Nice. And Edmonton sticks out for you. That's great.
Yeah, really sticks out. You know, I wasn't expecting to have that much fun, but people showed up and it was really fun.
you weren't expecting to have that much fun. What does that mean exactly? What did you hear about?
it's the cold, you know? It's the cold. I figure people don't go out that much because, you know, it's too cold outside. But there were some people, they were like at least 120 people. So, and it was not a weekday, you know, it was a Friday or something.
Yeah.
It wasn't a weekend. So it was like a Friday and I was like, okay, this is good. This is Edmonton was showing up and the food was amazing. I ended up eating at a restaurant next to my hotel. So I was nicely surprised about the city.
Oh, nice. So you'd never been to Edmonton before?
I've been to Edmonton before. Once I was touring with, opening for Busty and the Bass, but I didn't see much because the show was kind of outside of the city in one of those big centers, venues inside.
Yeah.
I didn't really get to see the city that much, but this time was good because I got to see and, enjoy a little bit of the city when I was there.
Oh, that's lovely. You know, I've only lived in this city about 3 years myself, so I'm still getting used to things. I'm from Ontario originally, so I'm still getting used to it. So no, it's nice to hear your perspective on that. To be honest, now you mentioned a bunch of tour dates there. Is this a return to touring for you? Did you take any kind of break in the last 3 years?
I mean, the pandemic was the break.
Yeah, that's what I'm obviously alluding to, maybe. But I've talked to people have done all sorts of things. Some people have plowed right through it and they were as active as they could be given the circumstances. Others were like, yeah, this is my first, I haven't toured in 3 or 4 years kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Well, for me, it was kind of different because I kind of kept touring during the pandemic a little bit. And during the pandemic with my collective Moonchild, we went back to Congo and did some work over there, recorded music. Also, some of the songs on the album, I started writing them in Congo and with my collective Moonchild. I'm also a DJ, so
yeah.
I got to travel with my DJ career as well. So I did a lot of DJing during this past 3 years, but it feels good to be back on stage performing my own songs.
Yeah. Did it feel distinctive? Like, did it feel different to be touring in 2022, 2023 than it may have in the years prior to the pandemic? Like a sense feeling. Did you feel different?
I mean, it felt great to be back, definitely, but it didn't feel different in any way. But it really did felt good to just reconnect with people and also the main difference will be to perform all the songs that I put out in the past 3 years that I haven't had the chance to perform. And I'm performing some of them on stage now, so it feels very nice.
Oh, very nice. Very good. How often do you get back to the Congo? Do you go frequently?
I try to go at least once a year. So last time I was there was January 2022. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see my schedule this year with all the touring, if I can find a moment to go back for at least for a little bit, you know. But I just feel for me it's important to go back as much as I can, just to stay connected and, you know, to be able to be to still be inspired by my culture. It's important for me.
Yeah, I assume you have lots of family there still?
Still lots of family, a lot of cousins. Most of my siblings are overseas, but cousins, uncles and sisters, and I have my older sister is actually still there. So it's always nice to go back and see her.
Yeah. Now, I did some flying last year just into the States from Edmonton, and it was quite arduous in a sense. It was a long, like 18 hours to get to like Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I thought, wow, like when I was, I don't know what's going on. That seemed like a long time. I've never, you know, I've not done a lot of flying out of Edmonton. Is it an arduous trek to get from Montreal to the Congo?
Oh, it is definitely, because there is no direct flight. So you have to have a stop, and the stop can either be some country in Europe, could be France, Belgium, sometimes even Germany.
Yeah.
So there's already like a 6-7 hour from Montreal to Europe,
yeah,
and then another 6-8 hours to Kinshasa.
Right.
So like 16 hour flying in the air, but in total, let's just say it's a 24 hour, you know, it's a full day of traveling.
Right. Okay. So that's always been the case. I guess what I'm saying is I thought maybe because I flew last year and I've heard people have like travel horror stories. But you've been traveling from the Congo. I believe you moved to Montreal somewhere around 2008. Is that correct?
2001, actually.
Oh, 2001. Yeah. I'm sorry. So you've been...
It was December 2001, actually, like a few months after the famous 9/11 moment.
Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, a pensive time. What actually, you know, first of all, let me just say, I appreciate that it's a long trip. I appreciate that it's worth it for you to make this trip so you can see your family and get connected. Like, how long would you, given how hard it is to travel there, in a sense, did you make a point of staying there for a month, 3 weeks? What is it?
Oh, I mean, 1 week is never enough. So especially when you're spending like a day traveling, so you want to spend the most time when you get there.
Yeah.
So I think 2 weeks is minimum, and four, you're getting close to the maximum. Some people can stay longer, but you're getting close. When I say you're getting close to the maximum, it's just like life goes on, life continues. You know, you gotta go back to your own business. But the good thing with me now, you know, that the work that I do with music, I can still make music over there. So I can say as much as I want to say if I wish to, but I always like to say at least 4 weeks.
4 weeks.
4 to 5 weeks.
Yeah.
4 to 5 weeks max, yeah. So you get to see everybody and you get to do all the business that you had to do and enjoy life.
Yeah. Sometimes when we go back home, beyond seeing friends and family, we might have particular places we want to go to, restaurants, maybe a music venue, this sort of thing. Do you have those in the Congo, like places you want to go and get some, you know, just get a flavor for your old life?
Oh, there's a lot of places to go in Congo, but the beauty of Kinshasa, or in particular, it's a musical city. It's the capital of Congolese rumba. And being in Canada, we don't get the chance to see a lot of Congolese artists perform here. So whenever I'm there, I like to see which artist is playing. And there are a lot of legends still alive, the Congolese rumba, that I haven't got the chance to see when I was younger. So whenever I'm back, I try to see. Last year, we catched a concert of Koffi Olomide in Kinshasa, which was amazing. And, you know, hopefully this year when I get back, there will be another show that I can catch. You know, I just like to be inspired, and I love nature. So My uncle has some land kind of far from the city, so sometimes I like to go there just to be in nature and eat some food and eat some fish, you know. That's the kind of stuff I like to do.
Oh, nice. That's lovely. You're making me miss Ontario. And there's not even a lot of culture there, but I miss my parents cooking. I miss my mother's cooking in particular now that we're talking about it. So I got to make a trek back at some point soon. You mentioned that you moved to Canada and Montreal in 2001. Can you talk a little bit about what prompted you to make that move from the Congo to Montreal?
Well, I was just a kid. I was 16 back then. So my mom moved here in 2000. Following my auntie, her younger sister, rest in peace. She passed away 7 years now. And she is the reason why my mom and I moved to Canada. And she always insisted for my mom to move here. And at some point, she visited Kinshasa and insisted again. She was like, oh, you should move, you should move, you should move. And my mom made the move. She moved a year before me, and as a child, I had to follow. So that's kind of what brought me to Canada. And I'm really, really, really grateful to my aunt and my mom to have brought me here, because I wouldn't have become who I am today, the artist that I am today, if that didn't happen, I think.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me say I'm very sorry about the loss of your auntie.
Thank you.
I just want to express that. Do you have a sense of why your auntie would have said, you should come to Canada? What was it about the difference between your lives in the Congo and what she was experiencing in Canada? Did she articulate that to you?
Well, she was, from her brothers and sisters, she was the only one living in Canada. And Canada was kind of far from Congo. And most of my mom's brothers were in Europe, in Switzerland. So she was kind of alone here and wanted family support. So I think that was the reason why she insisted on my mom coming here. And it felt great when we were here. You know, we had our little family, and we still have the little family, even though she's not with us anymore. I think she still watches us, you know, and
that's pretty much it. She was like, I'm lonely, get over here.
Exactly.
So, because I will say, for those of us who have never been to the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC, I think it's fair to say for up until maybe recent years, for centuries, it sounds like it's been a pretty volatile place to live in terms of the politics of the area. There are wars, there are other hardships. Is that fair? Is that something that's true, do you think?
I mean, I can say that it is true. You know, on the politics side, it is kind of still a roller coaster in Congo, especially with all the resources that the country has. So many other people have eyes on Congo, and that creates kind of a chaos sometimes. And we've been living in that for many years, but I don't think that it is less volatile than living anywhere else in the world, you know. People may think that it is dangerous living in Congo. I will say otherwise, because for me, I've been traveling a lot and I've seen many countries, and there is no other country that I'm more afraid of going than the United States of America.
Right.
So ask me why, you know, and so I feel safer being in Kinshasa, Congo, than being in random places in the United States. So that's just my point of view. But in terms, when we talk about Congo, it is sad to say that yes, for many years that we've been, it's been an unstable country, but it's still possible to live there and be safe. And there is hope. There, you know, people are still hoping for better, and people are working also for better.
I imagine the answer is both obvious and horrific, but why do you feel less safe in the United States than even Canada compared to the Congo?
Well, it just has the statistic, you know. Yeah. It just talks for itself. There is someone that gets killed every day, you know, gunshot kill every day, at least one people. And in Congo, nobody has a gun at home unless you're a cop or you're a soldier, you know.
Yeah.
So that's also the difference. Yes, it's unstable politically and because of all the resources and stuff, because of all the reasons. But some other countries are more unsafe than Congo, in my personal opinion.
Do you feel safe in Canada?
I do. I do feel safe in Canada. You know, Canada is one of the few countries that I can say that. And, you know, sometimes I can, you know, I watch over my shoulder, you know. You can never be too safe, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful to live in Canada, and I've been calling this country my home for over 20 years now. So Canada is as much my home as Congo is.
Yeah. I want to talk to you a little bit about your music and your history with music, both in the Congo and in Canada, because you came here. Sorry, did you specify how old you were in 2001? I can't recall.
I was 16.
16. Okay. So you have memories. You weren't like 3 years old. You would remember, your life in the Congo, and you had a formative time here. Okay. I want to get mm-hmm. to this history in just a moment. One quick thing I want to ask you about, since we're talking about the differences between some Western countries and your life in the Congo, particularly maybe since the pandemic or maybe before that, do you feel like we in North America treat things much differently than you would in the Congo? When I say treat things, I mean like, and the levels of seriousness with which we've taken this pandemic, for example, or, you know, other socio-political or cultural problems. Do you think there's a distinction between how such things in an overarching sense are handled or dealt with by the people in the Congo as they are here? I know that's a bit vague, but do you know where I'm coming from? Like, just like there's an illness. We all have to be careful. We all kind of bat down the hatches. What would be the outlook in where you come from originally? Would it be much different than the way we've been treating it here?
Well, I mean, that's a very, very tough question, you know, to answer, because that's something that affected like a lot of people, like the whole world kind of.
Yeah.
And different countries dealt with it in different ways. So I wouldn't say that Canada dealt with it better than Congo or the USA or anybody, because we never know. You never know how to deal with these kind of things when it comes, and you only have the resources that you have to deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
So some country had the resources that they had, and they did the best in their way. And some of them didn't have that many cases. So
it is different.
So it would be hard for me to say that in Canada we dealt with it better than in Congo or either way. You know.
I think where I'm coming from is in North America, in particular Western country, when you hear about Ebola virus or other kinds of outbreaks, until recently, I think there was a feeling like, well, that doesn't happen here. That happens in other parts of the world. And that's kind of where I'm coming from. Like, I wonder if some parts, and I know you can only speak about your own background and where you used to live, but I think some countries are like, yep, this is just another one of these things that we deal with. Like, we will do our best to deal with this. Whereas I think the shock of this particular thing has been like, everyone's had to be like, okay, what are we doing and how are we dealing this? Does that make more sense?
Yeah, that kind of makes more sense. Yes, of course, in some countries, we deal with this situation more often than others. But it doesn't mean that when it happens in the Western, we'd be like, it's their time to deal with it, or saying that, okay, this is the thing that never happens here.
Yeah.
I mean, some people may have those kind of opinions, but it's not my opinion. See what I mean?
I think you would have a different perspective, I think, is why I'm asking this. Like, most of us who grew up here are like, what the hell? This is usually not something that happens here. We've had some.
But the thing is, remember, I remember when I was a kid, when I was in Congo, there was the Ebola epidemic.
Yeah.
But it was only happening in a few places in the country. It wasn't in the whole country. But you will watch the news and they will make it as a big thing, as if you come to Congo, you will get Ebola right away. But yes, we were still living. Not all of us died of Ebola. It's the same thing that happened here. Not everybody died of COVID.
Right. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I guess what you're saying is the media and lived experience, not always the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. I just wanted to, I like talking to people who, you know, certainly aren't from, westernized countries. I just think your perspectives are or maybe interesting and might actually help just calm everyone down or not. I don't know. I mean, I think
people should definitely calm down, you know, and also just follow the instruction as much as they can, you know, we can't judge anybody in how they follow instructions, but, you know, do your best and try to survive. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you saying that. I already feel more calm. Just hearing your voice say these things, I feel more calm. Now, you make this beautiful music. Some of us have been paying more attention to it in the last few years. I want to figure out your origin story a little bit for those listening to us right now who may not be as familiar with it. Do you have a sense memory of when you first became intrigued by music, maybe as a child even? Like when you thought, oh, what is this music thing? I like this. This makes me feel good. And well, you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. I've always been drawn to music ever since I was a kid. I remember being the dancer, you know, the kid who dances a lot and at all parties, family parties. And I'll be the kid that, you know, my cousins or my aunties and uncle will call first to come on the dance floor and dance because there'll be some good music that I like to dance on, you know. Yeah. So that was like, that was my first, you know, my first love for music. It was dancing and I would dance all the time. And singing was always there. You know, I was singing here and there, but it wasn't really something that I thought about, you know. In my family, my uncles used to play guitar and write songs and sing. So we will sing songs together sometimes. Most of the time it's sad to say, but it's not always sad because, people would think that funerals can always be sad, but it's not always at least not in our culture. I remember once when my grandma passed away, my uncle wrote a song and asked all the grandchildren to sing at the burial. So that was a very beautiful moment for me. And Canada is one of my music introduction, but it was only later when I moved to Canada and I joined the choir at the Congolese Catholic church, the community here in Montreal. I was following my mom at church, and one Sunday, someone came to me after the church and asked me to join the youth choir. And I was like, oh, sure, why not, you know?
Yeah.
And it started kind of there.
Now, you mentioned, I want to ask about the music that moved you to actually dance. I'm curious about that. But just getting to that, you were known as a dancer. People would ask you and your family to start the dance floor, you know, get on the dance floor. So there's the movement. You were obviously sort of moved by the music. Like I say, I want to ask you about that. But what about the attention that you got? How important was it for you to be like, oh, everyone's kind of looking at me, and I feel, did that make you feel good? That obviously you liked a bit of that attention. Is that fair to say?
Well, I never thought of it like that, to be honest. You know, it's not about getting attention. For me, it was just like I was happy, and music made me happy. I just wanted to dance, and people were cheering because I was dancing, and I just liked it. You know, it wasn't about getting more attention than others at all.
Well, I mean, on some level, though, I appreciate that you never thought about it. When you look back on it and thinking of yourself now as a dynamic and exciting live performer, I don't mean this in a negative way. I just mean some children, I have two kids, some children are more comfortable and poised in such circumstances. Others are shy. You didn't have that. So that says something. I guess I just wonder where your confidence comes from. Not as much like... I'm not worried. I'm not concerned about your ego.
It's funny you saying that. Where the confidence comes from? Well, thank you for saying that. Right? But I'm actually really shy in real life. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's not unusual though. I talk to lots of artists who say I'm actually very shy and introverted off stage, but something happens when I get on stage and I can. I want to be. You know, they don't say I want to be the center of attention, but obviously if you go on stage and you gather people to look at you, there's something changes about you as a performer, as a person. Yeah, that's what I'm
definitely.
Asking.
Because, I mean, and also it's the music, and the music never lies in my personal opinion. And, you know, once you get there, you just get filled by this energy and you let loose and you want to express yourself. You want to express the meaning of these songs that you've written through the movements of your body. Yeah. I think that's just how I feel when I'm on stage, and I feel it's the same thing that I felt when I was younger. You know, I knew those songs, I knew those lyrics, and I knew those movements, and it made me happy whenever I could hear them sing along and dance when I hear them. I think it's kind of the same right now, where whenever I get to on stage and I get to sing my song and I get to tell these stories and express them through my movements.
Yeah, that's fair enough. You mentioned the familial connections there. Your family got you, and I think you said your uncle was among the people that had you singing, I guess, original songs. What kinds of music actually got you on the dance floor when you were very young? Do you remember?
Oh, it's definitely Congolese Rumba.
Rumba, right.
Yeah, Congolese Rumba, definitely. And we have many sort of dances in Congolese Rumba. There is one particular dance that was very successful when I was younger. It was called Ndombolo. And yeah, that was really my jam when I was growing up.
Now, I hate to ask you to articulate what a genre of music sounds like, but for those listening who may not be familiar with sort of the characteristics of Congolese Rumba, can you possibly characterize some aspects of it for us?
Well, I would say it's something between Cuban rumba and traditional Congolese music.
Hmm.
That's really what makes Congolese Rumba. Well, people, if you go online and read, people will say that it was the music was transferred kind of during the slave trade between Cuba and Congo. Well, I'm not that's smart to know all about that, but I know that there is definitely a lot of similarities and a lot of connection between Cuban Rumba and Congolese Rumba. Mm-hmm. But what's particular about Congolese Rumba is all the traditional sound that is added to it, all the traditional music from different tribes of the country that you can hear, and that just made it to took it to another level.
I see. Okay. Now, were you at that time influenced or even exposed to any particular westernized music that grabbed your attention at that age?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, we grew up the TV, and later on, late 90s, internet came in, you know, so we got to see a lot of Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson was very popular everywhere in the world, you know.
Yeah.
Céline Dion is still one of my favorites.
Wow.
And yeah, Céline Dion, I remember. I grew up in the 90s, so one of Céline's best songs in the 90s was Pour que tu m'aimes encore. And growing up in Congo, which is a French Francophone country, so Céline obviously would be very popular in those areas. And Pour que tu m'aimes encore was a very beautiful song and very successful in Africa in particular.
Huh. Do you think that the Francophone aspects of Canada and Céline Dion being from Quebec, is there any way that drew you in some... I gather your circumstances are your family could have taken you anywhere. You didn't have agents. You were just a kid. I get that part. But were you particularly excited to come to the place that Céline Dion was from?
Oh yeah, definitely.
you noticed it. You were like, "Oh my God, we're going to where she's from."
I mean, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to where Céline Dion is from. You know.
No, that's incredible. Now, so you in Kinshasa? Did people tour there a lot? Were you able to see some of the musicians that you admired from outside of the Congo?
No, unfortunately, no. I didn't see any artist there, and that's unfortunate because, you know, I wish we would have had better infrastructure to help those artists to come, but unfortunately it only happened when I wasn't born. You know, there was in 1974 Mobutu, the former president Mobutu, organized the fight with Ali and
in Zaire,
Kinshasa.
Yes,
in Zaire.
Yeah.
But back then it was Zaire, and you had all those artists, James Brown, Bill Wheeler, you know, many artists flew in to perform, but unfortunately we didn't see that. For me growing up, we didn't get a chance to see something like that.
Oh, okay. So just a quick question. Are there, you know, here, as you know, there are arenas and stadiums and all sorts of music venues of various sizes. You say there wasn't that much of an infrastructure. Did anything like that exist for, not just for fighting or boxing or soccer or anything like that? Was there anything? Was it common to see African artists in those kinds of venues?
Oh, yeah, definitely. One of the biggest artists in Congo right now is Fally Ipupa, and he just played last October 2022 at the stadium in Kinshasa, the Stade de Martyrs in Kinshasa, and I think it was about like 120,000 people.
Oh, 120,000 people. Oh, my goodness.
That's a lot of people, and Fally is one of the biggest Congolese artists right now, and actually even one of the biggest African artists right now.
So the Congo is like one of the largest and most populous countries in the world, right?
I would think so. I know that Kinshasa is one of the biggest Francophone city in the world. So there's at least 18 million people living in Kinshasa right now.
Yeah. So I guess I would think somebody even outside of the country would want to capitalize on this and say, you should be a tour stop somehow. You know,
I wish. Let's hope someone will figure that out soon.
is your success here noted there? Are people beyond your family and friends? Are you known as someone who kind of has not transcended, but has done well for yourself outside of the Congo?
I would think so. I don't think many people know about me, but a few people know. You know, January next year, before my album came out, I did a listening party. The first listening party that I did, it was when I was in Kinshasa. So, and I invited a few people and a few media came that were interested. And especially because of one of the songs in the album, it's titled Papa Wemba. Papa Wemba was one of the greatest Congolese Zumba singer ever existed.
Yeah.
So that was a very proud moment for me to be able to share that with the Congolese people.
Oh, that's lovely. And that's a great song too. I appreciate that has done well for you. That's great. Now, we talked about the dancing. We talked about you coming to Montreal and joining the choir and that shifting something in you. Do you have a sense memory of when you thought music is not something I can engage with just casually? I can do this. I can sing. I can play. Do you remember what prompted you to get into that way of thinking?
Well, for a while, I did two jobs. You know, I was doing the music and I was a tax collector at the same time, you know, because just I wanted really to be sure that I was on the right path. And I decided to take a sabbatical. So I took a sabbatical, and during that sabbatical, I toured a lot. And I believe it was really in that moment that I realized it's like the stage was where I needed to be. And I never went back to work. So I'm still doing it. It's been over 6 years now. I'm only doing music and I'm very happy about it.
Well, good for you. How many actual instruments do you play? I know. And I also want to ask how many languages you speak, because I mean, listening to your music, I can pick up on some things in French and English. Other places, I'm sort of lost lyrically, but that's I also get the feeling from it, which is just as important to me as a listener. But sorry, how many instruments do you play? Do you have like a first instrument, actually?
Well, my only instrument is my voice, you know?
Yeah.
And my voice, and I would say also my body, because I like to dance a lot. I move a lot when I'm on stage.
Yeah.
That's the only instrument. I try to play guitar a few times, but I'm kind of lazy. So I like to sing and dance.
So do you have any musical training whatsoever, or have you just sort of made this up?
My only musical training was really being in the choir, and I'm really grateful that I really started singing in a choir, because it taught me a lot. Yeah. And you could even hear it in my music, you know, I do all the harmonies and all the backing myself, you know, and I learned that all in the choir.
That's amazing. That's great. So your voice is your primary instrument. So you, when you have an idea for a song, you must, what, collaborate with some other people to try to bring it to life? Is that how it works usually?
Yeah, I collaborate and we'll be in studio and I'll have some ideas. I'll bring some ideas and we bring the magic to life.
Now, back to my other question. How many languages would you say you're fluent in at the moment?
I would say three, which will be English, French, and Lingala.
Yeah. Okay.
But I sing in 5-6 languages. So the first three that I just mentioned, French, English, Lingala, and Chiluba, Kikongo, Swahili, which are all languages from Congo. I did try a little bit of Portuguese here and there. And I also did a song in Dothraki, which is one of the languages from Game of Thrones with one of my friends. So that was pretty fun. I like to do.
So you're not content with actual languages. You're also interested in made up ones. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay. Now what? So most people, you've got three languages you're fluent in. And I'll be honest with you, most people barely have one. So what possesses you to not only on a, you know, in your music, not only stick to the three that you know well, to actually sing in languages you're not as fluent in? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I mean, we were talking about the choir before. You know, being in a choir also helped me do that, because I was in a choir and where we were singing in a Congolese Catholic church. So we will be singing a lot of Congolese church songs. And in Congolese Catholic church, we sing in pretty much all the languages of the country. So, because there are so many tribes, you know, you can't go to, when you go to church, there'll be a song in Chiluba at the beginning, and there'll be a song in Lingala at the end, there'll be a song in Kikongo in the middle.
Yeah.
So as a singer in the choir, you have to learn these songs. You kind of have to learn how to sing these songs,
yeah,
you know, how to pronounce these words. So I know how to read those languages, but I can understand some word here and there, but I won't be able to hold a conversation like someone who's fluently in them, but I'm able to sing in them, you know, as I was able to sing in English before even being very fluent in English.
Yeah.
No,
I appreciate that. You know, some people would suggest to someone whose dominant language isn't English to potentially write lyrics and sing in English so that they can reach a wider audience. But I actually think you make me think that logic is flawed, because if you're singing in 5 or 6 languages, ideally you can actually reach 5 or 6 different audiences. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And you said something, and I didn't even have to tell you that. You said something earlier. You said when you listen to my music, you can get the words in French and English here and there, and you get lost with the rest, but you can still feel it.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, is the most important thing. You know, you don't have to necessarily understand the lyrics, but as long as you feel, what's the message. And that's the most important thing. I remember growing up listening to music from South Africa, from artists like Yvonne Chaka Chaka or Miriam Makeba singing in their languages. And I didn't understand nothing about whatever they were saying, but I just felt connected to it for some way, somehow.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, the most important thing, especially in music. Music has no boundaries. And regardless of the language, I find myself listening to Indian music. When I say Indian, I'm really talking about India here.
Yes. Yeah, that's where I'm from, or that's where my family's from. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I find that really beautiful. And I always wanted to be like, I need to learn to find a way to learn the technique of this way of singing, because that's that's just how curious I am. So maybe on my next album, we'll find I can sing in Hindi or, you know, in one of the languages.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. I can connect you with my parents. They can teach you some Hindi. It'll be great. You can learn how to.
Yeah.
No, that's true. That's absolutely true. I think the voice of someone can carry just as much emotion as the content, if you will. But having said that, I know that, you know, you do tend to put a lot of thought into the lyrics and what you're actually singing about. And the feeling I get is one of, I don't know, I feel a little bit of empowerment. I feel like there's some romance there. My wife and I were listening to your music and she really enjoyed it. And she got that feeling too. Like this is like a sensual kind of romantic music. Is that a, does that resonate with you? Does that seem like a, an even or like a, an accurate rather, description of what you're kind of getting at?
Oh, definitely. Yes, there is a romantic side to it, and even a lot of sensual also music. You know, I'm a sucker for love. You know, I love singing about love and, you know, or everything that that's related to love. You know, I love talking about this thing. But there is also songs about empowerment, like you said, you know. You have this, the first song of this album, Joseph Vian Projects of Law, Liberté, Égalité, Sagacité, which to me is an empowerment, you know, song to empower people, you know, it's like, and to also question people, question our values or, you know, question whether are we on the right path or not, whether we should we change our ways or keep doing the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of all of that, but a lot of love still.
Yeah. We talked about some of your musical influences. You cited a couple of songwriters as well, but I want to expand upon that. In terms of lyricism, lyrics, do you have particular influences, people that inspire you as a songwriter?
Oof. I mean, I wouldn't have names like that, you know, but I'm really drawn to like beautiful poetry, and so I think any songs that just has this a way of saying things in a beautiful way, that that is where I'm more drawn to. You know, it doesn't have to be the deepest of the deepest lyrics ever. You know, sometimes you can say two things and mean five things at the same time. You know, I'm more drawn to this kind of way of writing than like over explaining things for no reason.
Fair enough. No, that's fine. And I like I say, I pick up on those sensations and feelings in your work. So I, you know, this, by the way, this is not a critique. I think they're great. I'm not saying I need to know everything. I tell you the feelings are there. You know, you obviously, and I didn't get a chance to say this, congratulations on winning the 2022 Polaris Music Prize. That is a tremendous feat. Were you surprised by this in any particular way? I mean, you're nominated, you're on the short list, there's always a chance, but were you surprised that night?
I wasn't surprised. When I left Montreal that day, I went there and I was like, I'm going to win this thing.
Really? You really felt that? Why did you feel that?
I don't know. It just, it felt right. And, you know, I was kind of, I remember being very scared when the album came out at first, because it was such a personal album for me, and with so much in that album. You could even hear my mom in that album, you know. People don't really see my mom that much. I talk about her a lot, but and people got to hear it on this album. So, and even writing that song was one of the scariest thing for me. So I was really proud that when the album came out, and being on the, first being on the long list was wonderful, and then being on the short list, as soon as I was on the short list, I was like, okay, this is it. We're going in. We're going.
Well, I will say, I appreciate your confidence. That's great. You never know what's going to happen, but that's great. I'm glad you felt that. And I mean, it was a feeling. You had a feeling, I guess is what you're saying.
I had a feeling, I had a feeling, and I think it was the moment, you know. And I mean, even if it wasn't the moment, you know, I think I'll make another one that will still, you know, get the attention deserved.
Do you feel like, I know there's a huge monetary prize that can be life changing. Did the actual, you know, victory, does it feel like it changed your life in some way?
Well, it's, I mean, I can see in, I mean, we mentioned all the days that I've done touring, you know, and I saw the difference, like in, especially in Canada, in some cities that I've played before. I've seen more people, and I've seen people actually coming to see me, you know. So to even if it's for discovering me for the first time, but they were really exciting to be there just for me. So that's nice. I think that kind of comes with this prize because, you know, people hear about me in Canada and even, you know, elsewhere, even in the United States, you know, they hear about it and all.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful. And, you know, the money helps to pay all the debts, you know?
Yes, of course. I mean, obviously the money is, it's a big thing.
Yeah. It's a big thing. It helps to pay all the investment that we did for, to make it this far. So I'm really, really grateful for that. Definitely.
Nice. Now, as we're speaking, you've just released a remix EP for the song No, No, No. From this record. Can you talk a little bit both about maybe why this song in particular seemed like it could be a candidate for such a treatment? And within that, can you tell us a little bit about these remixes? Because they're quite vibrant in their own way.
Well, we talked about passion, and this song is one of the most passionate to me. No, no, no. You know, it's like the title sounds kind of negative, but all the lyrics are saying the opposite, which is like... I want you, and the first thing that came to my mind when I saw you was I want to marry you. You know, that's kind of what I'm that's what I'm saying in that song. And for me, it's like, you know, it's a love anthem, and I wanted to share it with the most people and see it in different vibes. You know, which is why I invited Vinnie Fox. Young artist from Portugal, Lisbon, and he brought us a little Kuduro vibe, kind of Kizomba vibe, you know, slow down a little more the song. And you have this amazing producer and DJ, Spilulu from Congo, Lubumbashi. He's a pioneer of electronic music in Congo, and it was important for me definitely to have him remix this. And why not add another voice? You know, Majus, younger artist, also from Congo, based in Lubumbashi. It's just important for me to really like showcase like young artists and even older artists that didn't really have also, you know, the chance to be seen elsewhere. And me inviting Majus from Congo or Spirulu from Congo or any folks from Portugal to give them, you know, the Canadian eye, and you know, I can't be the only one enjoying the talent. You know, Canada also, I can have a chance to enjoy the talent.
Oh, that's lovely, and it's really amazing. I appreciate this EP as a compliment to this record.
Thank you.
The record's sort of the title invokes the paradox of love. I'm just curious. You know, time goes by, you process things. Are you any closer, Pierre, to figuring out this paradox? Sorry, do you have any new insights about love and what it means to you?
I'm not any closer to figure it out.
Okay. Well, that's an honest answer. I'm not trying to pry. I don't mean to pry, but I just wonder. Because, you know, you put your heart out there and then, you know, sometimes just like you had a feeling you were going to win the Polaris Music Prize, you express yourself and then love finds you.
But to be honest, I don't think I would ever find out, you know, and that's the beauty about love. You know, it's very mysterious, you know, and we just have to trust love and trust our guts and first love ourselves and try to love the people around us. And most importantly, also respect them.
Yeah. Well, that's well said as well. Now, first, to wrap up here, I have a couple of quick things. One, I'm wondering if you can tell us what's coming up next for you. And secondly, if people want to learn more about you and your work, I wonder if you can direct us to the best place to do that, I guess, you know, on the internet or whatnot. So, yes, can you tell us what's coming up and also where we can learn more about what's coming up?
Well, what's coming up, there's a few more dates. We have 4 days left to the tour. Mm-hmm. Ottawa this week. Toronto this week, Thursday and Friday. Next week, Quebec City and Montreal. We're ending this the tour in Montreal. I'm very excited to close this tour, but I'm also very excited for the summer and hopefully back in Edmonton in the summer. Who knows? You know, we'll see.
Nice.
And I love that. I have a little surprise, I would say, that is coming sometime in April.
Oh.
That's what I'm going to.
Okay, a surprise.
That's what I'm going to say for now.
Okay, fair enough. That's great. Thank you for that insight. And where can people go to learn more about you and follow your exploits?
Definitely on my social, Facebook, Pierre Quenders, or Instagram, definitely at Pierre Quenders, on my website, pierrequenders.com. You can find me. Yeah. Also, my label, Austin Craft. So all the info's out there.
Okay, perfect. Now, if we can go out on a song, I assume we should probably pick something from this remix EP for No, No, No. If we can go out on one of these pieces, can you choose one and tell us why you chose it?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Well, it's tough. There's only three, right? There's only three songs. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's only three. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Shall we do any, mini money more?
Yeah, whatever you want. I mean, I know it's hard. I know that we can pick anyone. Yes. I just thought if you want to give people a flavor for what this EP is about.
Yeah, let's go with Vinnie Fox remix.
Okay. This is the second track on this EP. Any particular reason you chose that one?
I mean, it's about love and it's about keeping people warm. And I think this version will keep people warm. You know, if you have a partner, dance with your partner on this song, and I'm sure they love it.
Okay. All right. From the from the wonderful new EP, remix EP for the song No, No, No. This is No, 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 featuring Vannie Fox by Pierre Quenders. Pierre, this was a real pleasure and an honor for me to have you on this show. I hope you enjoyed yourself, and I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thank you so much, Vish. Have a wonderful day.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
That was very enjoyable. I've never spoken with Pierre Quenders before. I don't think we've met. Maybe we've been in the same rooms. I'm sure we have. Anyway, it was very nice to have Pierre on this, the 755th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you heard about and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can currently like Creative Control on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Hive and Mastodon and Post. Is that all at Vishkana? Some of those aren't just at Vishkana, but I'm on those things now for some reason, but I only really use a couple of them. Anyway, again, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at least at Vishkana, and if you're on the other things, find me there as well if you want to. Visit patreon.com/creativecontrol if you can, please, to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain the work that goes into making this podcast. You can donate any amount you want and adjust it at any time. You could start out at $6 American or more a month, and that grants you access to some exclusive content, bonus material, episodes earlier than everybody else, that sort of thing. But you can do lower than $6 American or more a month. You can do higher, and you can change it at any time, and people do this, and it means a lot. I know it's hard out there financially, so thank you for even thinking of sparing some of your dough to support this show. It means a lot, and if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, please message me on Patreon, and I'll get you one just as soon as is humanly possible. Thanks again to the excellent Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, you can also order records from their website, blackbird.ca. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my dear friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on the show. Jim just messaged me to say he really enjoyed the recent episode with our mutual friend, Noah23. So thanks for listening, Jim. And again, learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with Pierre Quenders. I hope you'll check out Pierre's music and go see him live. He's a really dynamic performer and obviously a very thoughtful fellow. I hope that came across. And I hope you will subscribe to Creative Control, the podcast, or follow it and suggest to your friends that they might want to do the same to help them get through their days, kill some time, learn some things, maybe. I don't know. Thanks for that. I gotta go. Stomach hurts. But I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.